There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, y'all, put your mittens on your kittens and away we go. It's another edition of Midday Mobile. You know the number, but if you don't, that's cool. It's a learning process here. Maybe you want to save this in your contacts because 56 hours a week of live local shows coming from the studios right here at Airport and 65, Monday through Sunday, every day of the week, live shows, morning, midday, evenings. You got something you want to chime in on? 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106 for a call or a text. And if you have the FM Talk 106.5 app, you'll see a microphone icon on the front page. All you do is press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and I can play it back here on the air. So many ways to get in touch with us, and we appreciate that. I made a pledge here. I'm not going to check the Bitcoin price. And also an update, too. I did this yesterday and on Tuesday. I didn't do it Monday. So Tuesday and yesterday and today, still another 3 million pages out of the Epstein files have been out. Still not all of them. So there we go. Maybe next week I'll be out naming everybody. So I feel like, you know, like because I'm not in there. I obviously have failed at something. All right. Let's bring into the mix. I mentioned this at the end of Jeff's show. He is campaigning. If you haven't noticed, we've got an election coming up here. The primaries in May. It is for AL1. He knows his way around that block. It's former Congressman Jerry Carl. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Sean. I'm glad I'm not on Epstein's list.
This is a joke I've been making. Obviously, you know my sense of humor. If people don't, I'm not serious about that.
I've never taken a picture with him, and I don't know the dude, so I'm good.
Don't know the dude. Good. Like, there's things that driving Airport Boulevard worries me. My name coming out on the Epstein list doesn't worry me. So
it would worry me.
No, I'm saying that if it was like, how did that happen? Never met that dude. But another 3 million pages, and still. Yeah, I'm not in there. All right. To start off with, and we've talked about the latest polling here in the Republican primary here for AL1. I figured out your real competition.
I thought the poll told us who the real competition was.
It did. The poll told me the competition, and it looks like the runaway favorite right now in AL1 is Mr. or Ms. Undecided.
Well, that's true.
you had a great showing, but Undecided is...
But, like, you know, Undecided, around 30 or 35% is normal.
It's the most popular candidate in any election.
Undecided. And, it is high. There's no doubt about that. But a lot of people aren't paying attention to the poll. But that poll was very, very strong. I was very, very proud of it. I love that article. It's hard to get positive press these days with so much other stuff going on. But you know that group. We're fighting a group that's they're out of Austin, Texas. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I did not know that.
Most liberal city in America, and we're that gives you some idea of who doesn't want me back in Washington.
So the money's coming out of Austin, or the group that's running?
The group is coming out of
the Oppo.
They're registered in Austin, Texas. So that tells you how liberal they are, and it's going to get much, much worse. Just hold tight. They'll come out with stuff, trying to discourage folks from voting for me on my voting record. I'm very conservative. You can compare my voting record. You know, everyone talks about how conservative Barry Moore's record was. Well, I was just like 2 points below Barry Moore. I mean, There was not, and you know from the last election, you couldn't separate us.
No, and I've said that before. The voting, I mean, people say that, and I go, well, look at the votes.
But you'll watch these groups. They'll spend, they'll spend $1 million to just tear us up and tear us down. So, you know, we're trying to prepare for it as much as we can. You know, I'm willing to talk about it. You know, the issues that they're going to they're going to come after us about. It's fair game. I think. I made myself a promise I wasn't going to go negative. So if I don't respond to some of their idiot stuff that they say, don't look at me like you need to do something. I am not going to go negative.
Okay. Well, you're saying that because there's, 90-some-odd days to election?
103, but I'm not keeping count.
And the poll we're talking about, we discussed yesterday on the show, and you read over at 1819 News, too. So, Jerry Carl with 43%. Of course, I had to give him grief because Undecided had 44%.
Yeah.
But that is, by the way, too, the strongest. If you ever notice that, too, in presidential cycles, when you say unnamed, whatever party's in power in the White House, and then you go to the other party and say unnamed candidate from that.
Right.
The numbers are really good. The second they start putting names with them, they come down.
But yeah, sure.
It's but, yeah, I mean, it is substantial, and that's what I said yesterday. Your lead is substantial in this, and it does track. It's not a one-off. I look back to the Signal poll in August, those polls late in 2025, and this, it seems to be holding. It's increased, and it's not a one-off.
So here, we've got data from four different polls, and they all were within the range. They're all pretty. So with that said, I mean, my opponent there, all he can do is go negative. I mean, that's the only hope he's got is just tear us apart, and that's unfortunate because I was wanting to run on issues. I mean, I've got 40 years of experience in business. I've got 8 years in local government. I got 4 years in Congress. I think that equates to something, and I think experience right now in Washington is something that we might be lacking. There's going to be close to, I don't know where the final number is going to be, but there's going to be somewhere between 70 or 80 congressmen that will no longer be there, that will roll out. And we, Alabama, 1st District, needs experience going back in there.
Yeah, and because I want to come back to that. Some of the questions I want to talk about is AL1 and kind of making sure that we're seen and heard in Washington. But before we get to that, you mentioned they're going to, so this is your chance. If they're going to come after you on something, what are they coming after you on?
One of the things they're going to come after me on is the Afghanistan vote. We voted to let to Congress to let some of those Afghan folks come into America, because those were the scouts. Those were a lot of the guys that actually worked that were going to be slaughtered. Mm-hmm. Of course, Biden did what he did, and he pulled out too fast and did all that and made a mess of it. But we had Morgan Luttrell. Mm-hmm. Marcus Luttrell, everybody knows Marcus Luttrell, his history. Yeah, story, Morgan's got a very similar story. Morgan came to all of us and begged us to support him on that one, because most of those people we voted to let come in here were they're the reason my son made it home.
And, period. And I will second that.
I have no other way to explain it than that.
You know, a couple of my buddies personally, one of my buddies in particular, who not only they had their people came out, they went and got people out even afterwards. Yeah. They paid their own money to get people out. And like your son would say, used to say they're translators, and they say, no, Sean, they're interpreters. They're interpreters.
Yeah, they were butchered. Families were butchered. Everything.
But they were so pivotal to keeping our friends and your family alive, because I mean, the story that one of my friends gives me, when he'd correct me, I'd say translator, he'd say interpreter. He said, Sean, it wasn't just a language. He said, we'd be operating and go into a village or something like that, and this guy would say, something's not right with this. He said, it just looked like a village to me. And the guy's like, this thing shouldn't be there, and this person shouldn't be over there. Let's pull back for a second. That kind of stuff, not just translating the language, but going, this is not right, and save their butts.
Well, spending time with Luttrell, he convinced all of us, and I think it was a pretty strong vote on that one. But they'll attack us. They'll make us look like we're pro-open borders. I was one of the first ones down to the border.
Do you think that's going to get traction? Maybe to people who don't pay attention, but I thought that had support from a lot of us out there that said we need to not leave behind. The Hmong people in Vietnam and all these places. We leave people that helped us behind.
Yeah, but it will. I mean, there's a lot of people that will just see an ad and go, well, I don't like that, so I don't like him. They'll believe it. You know how politics is. We'll take a little bit of truth and stretch it into a full story.
So that's one of them you expect.
That's one I do expect. Some of the other ones, I don't know. It'll definitely be based on a voting pattern. But then again, you know, Club for Growth. We know who Club for Growth is. And a lot of your listeners do. Mm-hmm. Most people at home don't. I mean, I was in the top 10% of Club for Growth. They gave me awards.
And then they, in the last cycle, they did everything but.
Well, I know that. That's just the way the ball drops.
Coming right back, more with Jerry Carl. Get your questions from the text line as well at 251-343-0106.
On FM Talk 106.5.
It's at 1220 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. And our guest... going to answer some questions here from the text line as well. Jerry Carl in studio with us. This one from Fire Dog said, I've said it before via text, but I've spent almost $5,000 trying to find my Afghan interpreter. To this day, we still don't know where he or his family, we don't know where he is or if his family's alive.
I mean,
so Fire Dog says, it's like my buddies have talked, that's the same, they're doing how important those people were to
well
them.
Just remember that when the attacks start, I mean, there's always a story behind the story, so that's just one example that I gave you there that we feel quite confident, because that was a questionable vote. And if I go back and look at the vote, I guarantee you that probably every Alabama, because we're so deeply rooted in the military, our families, our friends, our neighbors here in the South, so my guess is it was probably 100% across the board, but I haven't looked it up yet.
Okay, Rock and Roll Doctor says, Jerry not going negative. That debate in Daphne in 2024 with him and Barry Moore was certainly negative on his part.
Oh, Rock and Roll, you're exactly right. And after that debate, I said I would never do it again, period. I was wrong. I've talked to Barry about that. I've talked to him more than once about it, and it won't happen again.
This from Jason said, Mr. Carl attended the Dr. Frank event last week, and I had the pleasure of speaking with him. Can you ask him what he learned there and how he plans to address it? Thanks.
Oh my God. I had to leave an hour and a half into it. I had to leave. I had another event to get to, but I learned so much about how the 2020 voting was actually rigged. And if he comes back to town, I'm going to it. I want to hear the last half of this. But some of the simple things he talked about was, you know, 50,001 votes in the state of Maine day before the election registers to vote. They voted 100% Democrat, and they moved the day after the election.
They moved. Okay, so.
So they checked in, 50,001. That's important, the one.
Okay.
They voted, all Democrat, and they all checked out as moved the day
moved
after.
Moved from the state?
Yes. It was all done electronically. And this guy is, I mean, he's a genius. I was so impressed. I went there to learn. I had no idea how stupid I was to the issue. He opened my eyes. I would highly encourage anybody, I don't care who you are, to go and listen to that and how offshore companies are playing with our elections.
Well, that's what I have heard in this discussion also, and he's going to be on the show with us later on today. Mark Cook he's going to be out. This is tomorrow at Hillspring Baptist Church, same place, tomorrow at 10:30. We'll talk more about that with him. He's coming on, I think, at 1:30 with us.
I've been invited to that. I'll try to attend that, too, if my schedule allows.
Yeah.
But we need to educate ourselves on what happened in 2020 so it doesn't happen again.
Right. Yeah, well, and the question is, too, like, what is going to come out of that Fulton County where they seize the voter rolls in Fulton County? I don't
I've
know.
I've been watching that.
I don't know what's going to be. This is from, this is Don, there we go, said, by the way, he's in the deer stand listening to us.
Like many people, boy, Don,
listen,
the guy after my heart.
Listen, there's many, I mean, I've said before, probably more listeners in deer stands per radio station than any other station in the nation is right here at FM Talk, and we appreciate it. He says, speak the truth, my friend. Ask Mr. Carl if he could change one thing, what would it be?
The amount of money that we can I mean, it depends on what you're talking about, but the thing right now is the amount of money we can spend on campaigns. I think we should really limit it. I think we should force candidates to actually get out and introduce themselves and actually talk to people, because this campaign is boiling down. I mean, we go to events every day. I was three yesterday. Today's an off day. It'll just be one. Well, if you count this radio, it's two. The candidates don't – they depend on raising money. And if they can raise a couple of million dollars, they can push their narrative through radio and TV and get people's votes. I deal enough with fake people being in politics. Mm-hmm. I like to sit down and look people in the eye and talk to them when I do. I can read their body language. And I think we need to get more back to that in politics. Less money.
Less money.
More personality.
Well, we're talking about changes like that, then I'll ask you this one. It's almost become cliched, but what about term limits?
I'm for term limits. I liked what Trump said. You know, Trump said two terms in the Senate, which is 12 years, mm-hmm. and six terms in the House, which is 12 years. I love it. I'm all for it.
Okay, so you'd support that?
Of course I would.
Now, would it ever get voted through?
I think that's yeah. very fair.
Yeah, I've often said that would be like asking the people in Congress to vote themselves a term limit.
I didn't get in politics to there comes a point in time where you become useless. I get that. I'm not there. I still got a lot of fuel left in my tank. I'm pretty energetic and mm-hmm. Do a lot of reading and try to stay on top of stuff. But there's some up there, especially in the Senate. You know, we call that the place that you go to die.
I call it God's waiting room.
Yeah, that's true.
What's as you're out?
And we got a young congresswoman up there that's going to be there for a while.
Yeah,
and that's very beneficial.
Well, she dropped
for Alabama.
The median age of the Senate by 47 years.
Oh yeah, she did. She did.
What are you hearing on the campaign trail out there? What's one issue voters are bringing up to you?
The economy. Everyone is worried about affordability, accountability, money. The price of stuff, inflation, everything's money. And I get it. And they look at me and say, how are you going to fix it?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you.
How are you going to fix it? Well, we've got to bring down it's a domino effect. And I'm going to use that term. But you bring down regulations on our manufacturers and our farmers, and you can see them produce a product cheaper. If they produce a product cheaper, hopefully the wholesalers will sell it cheaper to the retailers, which we buy it from the retailers, and it'll come across cheaper. We've got to focus on better jobs and also higher wages. And as an ex-employee, I mean, you and I had this conversation before we come on air. I mean, a company's only as good as the people at work. You want to make sure they stay mm-hmm. healthy and they can pay their bills. So
yeah.
It's a real simple process, but and I think we got the right person in place. You got Donald Trump. Trump has done an incredible job. And speaking of Trump, that's another issue they're going to hit me on. I'm not Trumpy enough. Well, I'll tell you, I've been to four of Donald Trump's events. I've been endorsed by Donald Trump twice. I'm the only candidate that has financially supported Donald Trump. And if that's wrong, somebody let me know. But I've said that numerous times in forums, and nobody's disagreed with me. So, but Trump has done an incredible job of with the tariffs. I know they're hurting us here up front. We knew they were. We knew it was going to be some backfire on that. But I think long term, we got to play a long term game here. Chinese look 50 years out. Mm-hmm. We Americans don't. We look today.
Yeah, and 4 year cycles, sure. Yeah. But without becoming China, which I don't want to do.
No.
How do we do that? Because I understand the long game. At the same time, you know, people's bills are due on a monthly basis.
Right.
You know, that's a tough thing. And I don't know. And I don't know if it's fair to say, what can somebody go to Congress and change, you know, the inflation issue? And I worry, too, that once you set up, other than gas and a few things like that, once a new price gets set, that beachhead, it almost rarely rare that it comes back down significantly. It might come back some pennies.
So one thing China taught us was to buy disposables. Before mm-hmm. that, everything was based mm-hmm. on quality. You went and bought a TV based on name brand, the quality, so on and so forth. Now you just walk in Walmart, and one that's marked $156, it's 54 inches. You want it, and you throw the other one away that you got at the house because it's only 46 inches. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's the consumer themselves have got to change, and we can't change that. That's not our job, but I think the market should drive everything that happens. We can try to influence and help the market, but we've got no business as elected officials or government setting prices. I don't think so.
And that discussion
I think that's what's killing
up.
Our farm community.
Yeah.
I mean, the government's basically setting prices on commodities, and it's unfair. These farmers should be able to sell their products nationwide, or worldwide for that matter. That's some of the stuff I've been working on with the farm community, trying to come up with ideas. How can we expand it? How can we sell peanuts and cotton to China, at other countries?
Because, you know, I mean, you just mentioned two, and you know where I live. Usually, I mean, it's nothing but peanuts and cotton around me, and they took it on the nose this year peanut and cotton. Yeah, they didn't. I mean, that was bad.
I mean, these farmers, they're just scratching to get through. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been in business for 40 years. I understand business. I don't know how the farmers make it. I truly don't. I've never understood that business. There's great years, and there's two or three bad years to follow.
Right, so. I guess the bad, and that's absolutely true. And, you know, I mean, I come from ag roots, but the bad years have been stacking up a little more. All right, coming back, more with Jerry Carl. Your questions at 251-343-0106.
FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Jeff Stone at Stone Arms. And, I mean, you talk about it. I was worried because once he put the... it's a computer on the wall. He calls it a kiosk. It's a fancy word. But you go into Stone Arms, and the whole process to get your tax stamp is expedited. It's put – everything's in one place, all right, to get your green light, to get a suppressor, silencer, can, whatever you want to call it. But when the big, beautiful bill passed and they took the $200 off there, still the requirement is there to get your tax stamp, but the tax stamp doesn't have any tax to it. It doesn't cost you. I was very worried that it would slow this whole system down so much, could be a flood of people. Well, there's been a flood of people, but ATF working a better system, and then folks like Jeff, he's getting people approved in 48 hours. So if you've long been saying, oh, I'd love to get a suppressor, you know, I'd love to get this, it's happening in 48 hours. You go right into the shop, put your information in, sends it off. And you can, while you're there, go ahead and buy the can that you want, or the rifle and can that you want, or pistol, or whatever. And you're getting it back so fast that he'll be calling you, and you come back out and get it. So listen, great selection of the handguns, the long arms in the shop, plus the suppressors that go with it, and all the accessories. But when you walk in, button hook around to the right and check out that kiosk. You can get everything done right there and be getting your green light from the feds, in some of these cases, within 48 hours. So check them out in person. They're just west of Snow on Airport Boulevard, about a quarter mile west of Snow on Airport on the south side, and online at stonearmsinc.com. All right, continue our conversation with Jerry Carl. Get your questions as well in the mix at 251-343-0106. How about this one? John said, my row cropping friends are literally thinking about fallowing the land for a year because there's absolutely zero profit in peanuts and cotton this year.
And that's sad. That is truly sad. That's, you know, how are we going to feed the future if we don't take care of our farm community? Our farm community is a precious, precious resource. And should I get elected, I go back on natural resources, and I'll also go back on appropriations, according to Mike Johnson. And natural resources, obviously, we deal with the farm community. We're dealing with pesticides. We're dealing with the more the chemical side to the farm community. Obviously, the farm bill doesn't come through us, but we need to stop and cut down on some of these regulations, period.
Let's talk about that, too. Combine two things, questions I had. So as you look at energy, talked about that. What role should Alabama play in Alabama's energy future, you know, for that? And then speaking like industry and all that, how do you balance that? Economic development, industry with protecting the water. I mean, we talk about the thin layer placement of the mud or other environmental issues, land here along the Gulf Coast. Where are you on that? Where's the seesaw sitting?
On natural resources, we had a bill come before us, and they wanted to take the whale, if you remember, the whale that they never saw.
Broadswell,
yeah. Yeah, but they said there were 54 of them, mm-hmm. and they wanted to shut the Gulf down. Boats.
No wake zone out in the middle of the Gulf.
Right, yeah. And no movement at night for a certain size ship. And I fought that tooth and toenail because that affects the natural gas and the oil drilling.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama's resource is actually natural gas.
Well, way more off, natural gas.
Yeah, off Louisiana is oil. So I fought that on natural resources, and we got it defeated is what we did. And that was during the Biden administration. That was also not an easy thing to do. So we were able to keep the Gulf open for that. You know, there's some things
Then the flip side is, where we live is a beautiful place. How do you make sure you're protected?
I was going to say about the mud dumping issue. You know, Chris Elliott just got that bill pushed through. Great job, Chris. I appreciate that. I'm not the only person in the world with good ideas, believe it or not, in politics. There are some other people. But, you know, that's a good start. But we've also got to weigh out and balance with the Corps of Engineers. We've got to sit down and have an open conversation about what we can or can't do. And it's all going to boil down to money. I'm just being honest here.
Right. But so other ports do this. I mean, we can walk and chew gum. I want the channel to be maintained depth and width.
I want that mud dumped out at sea. I want it.
Or upland or beneficial use or make marshes.
But that's not going to take long before that's filled up.
Yeah, but that'd be cool.
Marsh. I agree. But coming up with money, I mean, being on appropriations, that'd be part of my job, trying to see what we can do, passing it on to Senator Britt, you know, and her doing what she can do in the Senate. But it's going to boil down to money, and it's going to boil down to everybody sitting down at the table and keeping level heads. Because the Corps of Engineers don't want to ruin the bay. We, the fishermen, certainly don't want that bay ruined, and we've got a problem.
Johnny says, Alabama power needs to be put under control. That's what needs to happen. Alabamians are paying 30% more than the surrounding states for power alone.
Well, I don't think your congressman has anything to do with that. I'm not trying to get off the hook here.
No, you just need to look to Montgomery.
But you do have an election going on right now that you've got a couple of folks that own that ballot. I mean, the easiest way to fix that is change the people that are on that committee, that board.
Okay. Freddie says, so what's your plan to rein in deficit spending? As I've told Jerry before, you can't cut your pay, resources, and increase spending.
I agree, but how much are we wasting? I mean, everybody's talking about Minnesota. You don't think that happens in other places than Minnesota? I think we've got to hold the states accountable. We as federal governments, we give that block some money to the states, and we expect the states to be responsible for it. Have an audit system set up. Let's audit what they've done and how they've done it. And if you've got a school that's claiming to be feeding a couple of thousand kids a day, make the state responsible for it. That is that simple. Now, it happens in Alabama. You can't follow up on every dollar that goes out. I get that, but focus on the big dollars. Focus mm-hmm. on well, you got a small town that's getting a huge amount of money. Focus on that. I'm talking to the states here.
Mm-hmm.
But the federal government, we have to hold people accountable. And that's what's going on in Minnesota. It's going to blow our mind when they get to California and New York. I mean, there's some people need to go to jail.
We say that weekly on this station. But, I mean, what do you think of it? You think this is at that level in other states, too?
Oh, gosh, yeah. There's no doubt in my mind.
So we could be talking billions.
And I'm telling you, if we can make examples out of a group of people, it will send a shockwave, I hope, to the rest of them, where they'll stop doing it. That's the key, is stop what's going on. You can't catch them all, but you can scare them all into hibernation, and that's what you want. And then keep an eye on them. Keep an eye on them. I mean, you go borrow money from the bank, bank's watching you.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between the federal government dealing with the states, not individuals again, and making the banks, the states accountable?
Hey, that one's a big one, high profile. Anything else that you would put on your list of ways Washington's wasting taxpayer money?
Period. Yes, sir. I mean, they just write tickets. But and the elected officials in Minnesota, they'll scream and holler that was just a clerical mistake. No, it wasn't. That's out and out fraud and abuse. And it goes on, I'll guarantee you, in every state. But But the states have got to have some responsibility in this game. I think that's one thing Tommy Tuberville is going to bring to the table. Tommy's going to be one of the most unusual governors we've ever seen. I know Tommy personally. He's a good friend of mine, and he doesn't mind kicking a table over to get attention. And I hope when he comes in office, he sets that as one of his priorities. And I hope he's listening.
It's going to be a thing to watch Montgomery
react with somebody
who has not been part, you know, not even conservatives in Montgomery, but they've been part of the system for so long. I'm looking at it this way. When you walk into somebody else's business or something you can do, have somebody else come into your business and like one of your buddies and look at your business, they're going to ask questions. Some of them you'll be like, that's a dumb question. Why are you? And sometimes you go, oh, I had never thought about it that way. Yep. I wonder if there will be that effect. Since, yes, he's been in Washington, but he's never been in Alabama state government. If he walks in there and just asks the questions that may make people uncomfortable, you know, just because he's, hey, how's this work? Explain why we do this.
Yeah, but you look at a guy like Tommy, and I'm not here to talk about Tommy. I'm here to talk about myself. But you look at somebody like Tommy, I mean, he's been a coach. He's had to work with budgets. I mean, he's had to work with personalities. He's having to work with scheduling. I mean, he understands it. He gets it. He's run a business his whole life. It's called coaching. I don't know anybody who works more hours than a coach. I mean, he's used to 6 in the morning to midnight. I mean, that's just a coach, especially during football season. But I think when he gets up there, he's going to kick a few tables over, and we're going to see some positive things financially come out of it.
All right. LV says, what is the status of the windfall oil and gas revenue that was supposed to be put up for in perpetuity? I think he's probably talking about Gomesa money. I think it's fine, right?
Yeah, Gomesa's. Yeah,
that what's running out is the oil spill money. That's 2032, I think.
The Gomesa money is used. They get it every 2 years, and it falls back through. It comes through the county commission, and some of it obviously goes to the city too.
All right, let's talk about taxes and tax structure right now. It's been a big thing that, you know, the big beautiful bill had some issues with it, but it was, you know, sold to a lot of conservatives about keeping taxes lower. Where do you see us going post-Trump? What would you do? Where do you think the tax structure should be?
If it was me, I'd go to a flat tax and collect it at the cash register. I mean, that's simple. I know my accounting friends just cringed. I've been working with a guy on the internet. He's been back and forth about a fair tax. I'm still a little confused.
Yeah, I used to have the signs in my office. I end up just giving up because reality and decades beat me down. But
I get that. But somebody's got to pick that baton up and keep running with it. And I'm not running on canceling everybody's taxes. Don't think I've got that power. But you know, if I was king for the day, it'd be a flat tax and we'd pay it at the cash register. What would it be? I don't know. Have to run the numbers. It won't be anything you like. Mm-hmm. It'll probably be 25% at the cash register, but you're not paying taxes on your home. You're not paying taxes on your truck. You're not paying taxes on fuel. I mean, you're just collecting it at the cash register. It's that simple. Because to file a tax, I get real nervous at tax time.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I owe them money, but just making sure I'm a little. The only thing people ask me all the time, what are you scared of? I said, IRS agents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the only thing I'm really fearful of. So I make sure my T's are crossed, my I's are dotted.
Yeah, that's what, you know, I don't outsource a lot. I fix a lot of stuff myself, except for my taxes. And I have people that are way smarter than me. Let's see. You know, we were talking about money, too. This is two things here I put on my list, things we had talked about before. We talked about term limits. What about stock trading in Congress?
You know, I want people to really be cautious on this. There's a lot of good people in Congress that trade stocks that make money. That's the way they've always made money. I set myself up when I first got elected in county commission. I set my money up where it would be mutual funds. I've traded one stock since then, and that was when I was out of office. I bought some Tesla stock, and I'll be more than glad to sell it to you when I paid for it, if you would like to have it.
Well, it came back up, but let me check. Why are you talking about check if it came back?
I did not want to be questioned on that, but be careful because there's a lot of good legislators that are in office that you're going to automatically strip and get out because they're not making a living being a congressman. You know, they're making that $174,000 a year, which is a lot of money here if I could go home every night. But they've got two homes. They've got two sets of everything that, you know, we have to live up there, not to mention the personal expenses it costs. But I think it's wrong, some of the stuff. I think it's extreme. It's just a handful. We've watched Nancy Pelosi, for example, trade down on the floor. My staff has sitting up in the balcony,
you understand
looking
that,
down on
you,
her phone.
You understand why that bothers a citizen?
Well, I totally understand it. I'm not defending those folks. I'm just saying let's be cautious because especially some of the folks that we've got watching our money understand money. Do you want somebody watching your money that doesn't understand money?
No.
I mean, think about that.
But it sure is. I mean, you sure can seem like a wunderkind, a phenom.
Yeah.
When you know.
Well, you tell them they can't trade stocks anymore. They have to figure out are they going to pay their bills or go home.
You know, I did for a while, made a little money. I followed her picks on Twitter.
I don't fool with it.
She helped me. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:52, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Our guest here for another 8 or so minutes, Congressman Jerry Carl, running for the office of AL1. This text from... I think this is Johnny. Why did Congressman Carl vote to raise the debt ceiling while he was in office?
Why did we raise the debt ceiling?
Why did you vote to raise the debt ceiling while you were in office while we were over $30 trillion in debt?
Because we're trying to keep the government moving, open. That was, I think we did that twice in a four-year period. But the debt ceiling is important, but when they're talking about shutting down the government, it's military getting paid and everyone getting paid, you have to take some hard votes. That'd be a hard vote. I mean, sometimes you have to take the stuff you don't like. That was one of them.
Fire Dog says, Jerry has always had my vote, and then went on to say, Neil Bortz wrote a great book about the fair tax back in the early 2000s. Actually, he wrote a couple of them, Fire Dog, and you want to be jealous? Autographed copies of those from old Neely Boy, who kept up correspondence with over the years, are sitting in my office.
Oh, boy.
Wayne, our buddy Wayne, good. Wayne Biggs said, good morning to two of my favorite friends. I'm a big supporter of Mr. Carl. I'm honored to call him my friend. The only concern with a flat tax is collected at the cash registers, a number of businesses throughout the country who failed to submit sales tax in a timely manner. I'm not sure I would want the federal income tax in the hand of tempted business owners. Great show and keep up the good work.
That's a great point, Wayne. I mean, I've not thought about that, as silly as that may sound. Good point.
This texter, unnamed texter, I don't want any politician, respectfully, I don't want any politician drifting my money while taking my money, especially using the two houses excuse. Maybe drafting or drifting, I don't know.
Yeah.
Talking about the members of Congress trading stocks. I mean, it's... You know, if you put a blind trust up or something like that, that's fine. But I mean, I think people do worry that, like, I'd like to have that information before a vote came up. I mean, before, you know, I'd like to have the idea of what's going to happen.
Good luck getting that one through the Senate.
Do I agree? Same reason that I am on the fair tax. It's a great idea. Do I think it's going to happen? No.
Yeah. Well, but we got to keep coming up with ideas. Something will stick after a while.
What about... border. I think about the times, you know, you were in here during the, you know, when you're in office and we talked about the situation on the border. You went down the border, you saw it. Seems to be a little quieter down there these days.
Much quieter down there. And so, you know, Tommy and I, we went, our governor, whatever you want to call him, we went down to Panama and we tried to figure out how to cut him off in Panama. And while we were down there, we discovered the issue with the Chinese basically taking the country over, and we came back and talked about that. But the border issue is exactly what Trump said it was going to happen. I mean, he shut the border down. They're still building the border wall. I don't know where they're at on that. I haven't kept up with that. But when Trump did what he did and started shipping people back, he took the profitability out, and the coyotes quit bringing them across. That simple. I mean, the coyotes were making $2,500 for everybody crossing the border. They had no choice but to pay it. It's not like they could just walk past the cartels. That was a fee.
And so this, I wonder if this, is going to change with the new administration in Washington, you know, somebody new.
Well,
in the
new administration, I mean, with a Republican, you know, I don't think so. There's so much history. Once that border wall is built, you know, we'll obviously have maintenance on it, but it's built, it's solid, it'll have require maintenance. But even a Democrat with half a brain in their head will understand, you know, we got a housing shortage right now. And I wonder how much of that housing shortage is being created by 20 to 30 illegals that are here.
20 to 30 million.
I'm sorry. I was thinking millions. But think about that. How many houses are they actually consuming that could be on the open market? How does that affect the pricing we're paying now? Does it drive the prices up? Of course it does.
Okay, as we close out here, we started off with me looking at this poll, this out. We've been talking about this week with you leading the AL1 Republican primary by significant numbers with 43%.
The poll does not vote. Folks, if you don't get out and vote, it doesn't work.
Well, that's why I want to talk to the other big number on there was undecided
right
in this. So your appeal to the undecided voters, what do you tell them?
You know, I've got 40 years experience in business for myself. I've got 8 years in local government, and I've got 4 years in Congress. I understand how things work. Don't like a lot of it, but I do understand it. We've got 2 more years of Donald Trump. You've got to get somebody up there that can actually work, get some of this stuff codified, and work with Trump. So get ready, folks. You think it's bad, wait till the last 2 years in Trump administration and watch how they come after him. It'll be brutal. You're going to need somebody tough, somebody that's used to it.
Okay,
I'm the man.
Okay, this is the closeout question from Don. He said, I got a question. Second question is a tough one. Does Mr. Carl believe God is in control and his will be? There's only one way I can place my thought if he agrees, and he will get my vote.
I'm very strong in my faith. I believe God's in control of everything. I think humans mess it up. I think if we all lived by love and faith in God, I've really been digging in and learning more about faith. And I love car keys. That's what I'm using for an example. I'm handing God my car keys and say, you drive. I'm not going to worry about driving. Well, I'm doing that with my problems. My problems got keys. I just given him the keys. And that's called faith. As simple as that. Not complicated.
There you go, Don. I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. We'll come right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile. Kyle Hamburg from LandNap joins us, plus Mark Cook. He has an event coming up tomorrow, Hill Springs Baptist Church, talking about ballot integrity. We'll get him on at about 1:35.
I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday, which, by the way, too, polka dots tonight. And then you get Incas tomorrow night and rolling straight through the weekend. Mardi Gras is here and right there in the middle of it, along the parade route. The home offices, the international world offices of LandNap and LandNapMobile.com. That's where we found the, I think he's chilly right now, our friend Kyle Hamrick, checking in from your studio, right? Your opulent studio?
Yes. My very luxurious studio. Normally we would have the 5 fireplaces roaring, but couldn't get any wood in today, so it's a little chilly now.
In your car?
yes, in my parked red Chevy Impala.
I love it.
It's a little nippy.
Yes,
now, but
it is for sure. And talk about, and we'll come back at the end and remind folks about getting signed up over at LanyapMobile.com. But this is an example here of, I mean, the paper's a great thing, but the website is, you just get news every day and breaking news as it Absolutely. Happens. This story wasn't even up Absolutely. When I was getting ready for my show today, but popped up during the show. You have a story just up now at LanyapMobile.com about these two dirt bags, I'll call them. You're the journalist. I'm the editorialist that Hey. Decided to shoot up the city here at the beginning of the year. What did you learn about these people from Michigan that moved here?
Right. So they went back to court today for a preliminary hearing. This couple, Justin Sinia and Ariel Perot, engaged Mobile police in a standoff outside their home on Tuscaloosa Street in January. They came back to court today for a preliminary hearing where a detective for the police department testified about some mental health issues that this couple from Michigan had, and how the man, Justin Sinia, claimed to have heard some voices in his head that helped him come up with this plan to fire a pellet gun at their next-door neighbor's car to get the cops called on them, and then to start shooting at as many members of the police department as they possibly could. And the plan was to die in that encounter with law enforcement. So very strange stuff that came out of district court this morning. And then they actually handed that case to the grand jury for a formal indictment that could come in, you know, some months.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, you know, theory of it's suicide by cop with these two, but also right. a discussion that came up right there in the days afterwards in press conference. I think a press conference actually with District Attorney Blackwood talked mm-hmm. about what they had on hand, like maybe they were going to hole up. Didn't they have they had drinks and water and food and stuff?
Yes.
Stored
yes.
up.
Yes, some more details on that came out today, too. They had cases upon cases of bottled water. I drove by their house while the detectives were going through it, and I, you know, saw the piles of water and the piles of ramen and, like, beef jerky and all of that. The detective said that they flew a drone into the house while the standoff was going on, and they saw that all the windows were boarded up from the inside, all the doors were blocked. They said that these two people were wearing gas masks. They had like some earmuffs on, like you'd wear to the shooting range. They said that they found two Glock handguns, a shotgun, a rifle, and lots and lots and lots of ammunition for these guns. But yeah, they had barricaded themselves in, and they were ready for a long haul of some kind. What also came out in court today was, you know, these people came from Michigan. Apparently, they had a tense relationship with their families, some bad blood there. And the detective said that the woman told one of the neighbors that they had moved down here to get away from their families, and that if their families came down here, they would find them, you know, armed very, very well and ready to defend themselves. So it's some scary stuff. It's very strange, very weird stuff to start the year with.
Yeah, and you mentioned this timeline with shooting the pellet gun into the neighbor's vehicle to get police to come out.
Right.
That was so the voices told him to do that. The allegation here is the voices told him to do that. Did the voices then tell him right. and also shoot police officers? Was that the voices, or was that something he came up with on his own?
He had said that that he and the voices came up with the plan. So there's that cooperation there. And And those more on that will definitely come out, you know, as the trial gets going, you know, whenever that comes, if that comes. But I believe there's going to be some kind of mental evaluation of these folks coming soon. The guy, Senia, had said that he had a pretty lengthy history of mental health problems, bipolar disorder, OCD, and then some other stuff I hadn't heard of, like something that had to do with like a head injury from when he was a kid, or something that happened when he was a kid that contributed to his mental state. We didn't go into many any details on the woman's mental health stuff, but I believe she had told the investigators that there was some history there. Neither of these folks have any criminal history here. They've never had an encounter with law enforcement here. They weren't known to them. The guy was a software engineer for Ford, but he had been fired from that job and had been out of work for about 6 months by the time the standoff took place. And of course, what we can't forget to mention here is Lieutenant Matthews. Lorenzo Matthews.
100%.
Yeah.
Excuse me, which, by the way, y'all, just side note to interrupt, for if y'all, we talk about it from time to time, you go check out our Facebook page. You want to help out Lieutenant Matthews with this long recovery. We have links to different things going on, from GoFundMe to raffles and all that going on to help him out there. But that's the key here.
Absolutely.
They brought this evil from Michigan down here, and we ended up with a Mobile police officer, I think a 20-something-year veteran who was
26 years
shot, and it going through a long, long recovery.
Yes. What came out in court today, the detective said that, you know, he was one of the first people on the scene to this call of, you know, shots were fired from this house to the nearby car. He apparently walked up and knocked on the front door a few times, and then that's when the shooting started. They shot out of the window, and they hit him once in the radio, and then they hit him in the side. And after that, he, you know, was able to get away from there, got back in his car. He actually drove himself to the hospital, where he got some treatment there. The detective said that once the shooting started with Matthews, it just kept going and going and going at the police until they surrendered about 3 hours later. I need to check in today to see how the fundraiser is going for Matthews. But the last time that I checked, which was a couple of weeks ago, they had raised, I think, tens of thousands of dollars for him. He has a very long road to recovery. I believe he's in, you know, good condition, but he got shot in the side, and he's got, you know, a long time of some physical therapy and some rehab ahead of him. But that fundraiser for him is still ongoing, I believe, and I've got to check in to see just how much money they've raised for him.
Yeah, I know, but it's still up. I don't know the total, but it is still up. At least it was yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, while we're talking about this, Kyle, this is a segue into it, but because I mentioned District Attorney Blackwood, has come up. How much of this is a battle between the city council or the city of Mobile and the Mobile County? How much is Montgomery? It's questions about money to go to the DA's office, right, for prosecutors.
Right.
So what's happening here? What's laid out? What's the story?
Right. So the city of Mobile plans to give about $3.3 million to the DA's office over the next three years to make up for a funding shortfall. When the press release came out last week from the city, I read it as having a very kind of snippy tone to the county, because a couple of years back, the county and the city got together and decided to give some of their COVID money to the DA to help break up a backlog there. That deal had a three-year time limit. It went out in 2025 and the county didn't want to renew it. But I'm seeing now that the fight here is really with the powers that be in Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
Keith Blackwood told the city council Tuesday that the state chips in about 20% of the budget for the DA's office here in Mobile. The county commission makes up 50. And then, you know, I wasn't a math guy, but there's still a pretty good chunk of change left over that the DA has to pick up all on their own to fund the rest of their office. And that's why they went to the city to get some money here. The county has said that they didn't want to give any more than they're already paying, and they want the city to chip in because, you know, a large amount of the felonies that the DA's office looks into comes from the city. But it's the issue that the state does not give the proper funding to the DAs. And it's not just here. It's all around the state, really. I believe Keith Blackwood said that DAs around the state have to raise about $70 million per year on their own when they're a state office that should be supported fully by the state. So it's very strange situation that we're in here with the funding.
You know, okay, so, and another part of this, I don't know the amounts here, but I remember this conversation from over the years of one of the places that they were getting money from in the past that they don't so much anymore was bad check fees, right? The district attorney office would get, but, you know, other than the lady in front of me in line at Rouse's, not a lot of people write a check anymore. They use a card.
Not quite as much as they used to.
The lady who has to dig into a purse the size of my duffel bag and dig out a checkbook and write. Other than that, they're not. And I don't know what percentage. It may be de minimis anymore, but it was like, I remember a few years ago, they said, you know, one of the places, and I think it was when Ashley Rich was there, she would say, one of the places we don't get money from anymore is the bad check fees. That's how we funded part of what they did, so.
Right. Well, and that's what Keith got into as well, was this is an outdated funding system that I believe started in the 70s. And he plans to go up to Montgomery, and, you know, the DAs around the state plan to go up to Montgomery, you know, to meet with the lawmakers and see if they can get some more money in the budget. I am not sure if that'll happen this year. There's some, you know, like we've talked about here, there's some pretty heavy gray clouds on the financial front for the state. I believe their budget director said that the sugar high is done for the state when it comes to the extra money from COVID and, like, the interest in the bank. So we'll have to see what kind of funding they can get. But it definitely seems to me that for a state office that prosecutes violations of state law, they should have as much money from the state as possible and as little from the locals.
Well said. All right, people want to check out these stories a whole lot more. They can check you out online, and then we'll talk about if they want to, you know, touch newsprint. But first, laneatmobile.com. What's the pitch here, man? How do we do it?
Absolutely. We have news coming out all the time on Laneat Daily, laneatmobile.com. The paper is just the tip of the iceberg here. So head to laneatmobile.com. We have a subscriptions tab that you can click on, find one that works for you. And if you need help getting started, call the office. We'll be happy to help you see the galaxy of news that we have for you on laneatmobile.com.
It's a whole bunch. I never thought to use galaxy, but yeah, but you're a man you're a man of words, man of letters.
Hey, that's what they pay me to do, at least.
That's for sure.
We shall see.
There he is, our buddy Kyle Hamrick. Thank you, man. And we'll talk to you next week, and hopefully see you down along the parade route this weekend.
Absolutely. I'll be on my knees trying to find some doubloons.
There he goes. Kyle Hamrick, good stuff, and we'll be right back.
Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 126 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Let's head to the phones here at 251-343-0106. And David in Mobile up next. Hey, David.
Hey, Sean. How you doing today?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
I can't complain. Listen, that budget, those budget gray clouds that Kyle talked about with the state, at the state level, is also coming down the track for the city of Mobile. And I know that $1 million a year is like 1/300th of the city budget, but it's just like with your personal budget. You do $10 here, you do $15 there, you do $20 here. Pretty soon, all of that adds up to real money. So I've got some ideas on I think the city council should only agree to the $1.1 million for the first year, which would allow the city, the county, and the state and the DA's office to sit down over the next year and figure out a permanent solution to this problem without having the county or county offices continuing to go to the city with his hands out. Because this is the third time since Mayor Chirigadas has taken office that the county's kind of come to their city with the handout, and that needs to stop. So here's some ideas that I just wanted to throw out there, just off the top of my head. I'm sure I could come up with more if I looked at a detailed dive into the DA's budget. But let's go ahead and outsource that bad checks division at the DA's office to a civil debt collection law firm, especially considering that it's not bringing in the revenue that it used.
Yeah, there's no money in it anymore. That's just something I remembered from back in the day that was a changing element for them.
Yeah, and that private law firm can actually work off of a percentage of what they actually collect from those bad checks. Another thing they can do is right now, if you get a speeding ticket or get charged with a misdemeanor in the city of limits of Mobile by the Mobile Police Department, you go to municipal court. But if you get a traffic violation or a misdemeanor charge from the sheriff's office or the state the ALEA, you go to district court. Well, they could change that since all of the municipalities in the county already have the infrastructure in place to do this, that if you get a misdemeanor or a traffic violation anywhere in any city limit, anywhere in Mobile County, you go to that city's municipal court. That would free up, it wouldn't free up everything, but it would free up some resources from the district attorney's office, because then you'd have city courts and city prosecutor's office dealing with those cases. And then finally, this is going to be the least popular amongst your listeners, but I strongly suspect that if you put a one penny gas tax in place on countywide, that would probably raise enough of the money to close that $1 million gap, if not more than that.
There it is, David, the petty tax man. I appreciate you chopping in on it. And we were going to have District Attorney Blackwood on the show tomorrow. We'll talk more about that with him. Coming right back after the news.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1:35, and this segment of the show brought to you by Adventurous Bicycles, my buddy Clint Jameson, and easy to find, Midtown, corner of Little Flower and Airport, kind of catty cornered across from Ruth's Chris, online at adventure-earth.com. Always good to look at his website, really good right now, too, because the ad for the Dinago City 2 e-bike is up. Told you, 3.5 years now riding e-bikes, courtesy of my buddy Clint Jameson, and it's been a lot of fun. And we'll talk about it sometime in the future. Truly get more exercise. If I had a regular non-e-bike, I wouldn't ride it. Okay. With the e-bike, with the little assist on it, I ride more days, more miles, and get more exercise. It's fun. But right now, he's got the Dinago City 2 e-bike with the 500-watt motor, 48-volt battery, and a Class 3 e-bike. So it can go up to 20 miles per hour on just the throttle, 28 miles per hour with the pedal assist. This is normally a $2,000 bicycle. Right now, $1,400. He's got a certain, I don't know how many he has left. I think he told me he had a few left here. The Dinago City 2 e-bike, $1,400 right now. And if that's not the bike for you, don't worry. 70-plus e-bikes in stock at any time for you to take a test ride on, which is kind of fun. And if you want to go with those Amish bikes, he can do that as well. 400-plus, plus all the accessories. And a good old-fashioned bike shop where they do all the tuning, putting together right there in the shop. They can also work on the bike you have now. Check them out online, adventure-earth.com. Or go see them in person. That's the most fun, at the corner of Little Flower and Airport in Midtown. All right, we've mentioned this earlier. We were talking about this when Congressman Jerry Carl was on with us last hour. The guest coming up here at 1:30. He's going to be in town. You're going to get to see him in person tomorrow. His bio It's like, I just ask him, bring him on. It's Mark Cook, who's coming to town. He will be speaking at Hillspring Baptist Church tomorrow. Can you get all that on a card, Mark? I mean, you are a IT management, technical direction, project management, network architecture, network design, database design, administration network, cybersecurity, visualization, forensics, data recovery, penetrating, testing, software development, wireless architecture, optimization, security. I mean, does that all fit on a business card, man? That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, you missed a few, though.
Yeah, I know. And then the next page here, embedded systems design, installation, diagnosis, optimization. Your specialty is in diagnosing complex system and specializing in root cause analysis. And for fun, what do you do, do with the rest of your day, man?
For fun, I fight bad guys. I expose corruption.
And we're happy you're doing it.
I do it on an e-scooter, actually.
Do you?
So I do travel around in a truck and a trailer. But my truck gets 8 miles a gallon, and so usually I try to park in places that are conducive, and I'll jump on my little e-scooter. I charge off my solar, because I am an environmentalist, even though I am a conservative now, but I did grow up a Republican, or a Democrat, became a Republican later, but here's what I found out. I found out through all this stuff and, you know, decades of being in the electronics and computer industry and solving all kinds of problems with computers that this. Our elections have been completely taken over by computers, and they've been the system's been designed by bad actors, unfortunately, to be able to put on this illusion, and they call it an election, but I call it an illusion. And their goal is to subtly and covertly manipulate the results in a way that we can't see it, so that everything looks believable to the rest of us. And some places are worse than others. You guys might be a little bit safer here in Alabama, but they'll come get you. And my intention here, the reason I'm in this state, I don't want you guys to go down. I don't want you guys to be a target of this corruption, because once that corruption makes it into your state, there's no getting it out easily. And I came from Colorado, where the corruption is all the way through Colorado. And we used to be a very different state before the computerized voting systems and the mail-in ballots and the early voting. And when all that showed up, our entire state changed drastically, 180 degrees. It is like Twilight Zone state now. And the same thing will happen to you guys here unless you put up the proper protections. And I've got a very simple solution to that.
I like that. I need those. And I will say, too, for looking at Colorado, in not that long a period of time, it went from red to purple to blue. I mean, that transformation was pretty fast.
Well, it was all an illusion, actually. It's still very red. And when I say red,
yeah, I'm just talking about the votes. Yeah.
I'm talking about the citizens lived in peace, and the citizens were not enslaved by their corrupt government and corrupt government officials. That's what I'm talking about when I say red. We had true liberty and freedom and low to no crime. It was a wonderful place to live. And it turned into an absolute H-E double L hole in a very short period of time. I watched it happen over 20 years, and they kept telling us, they conditioned us, saying, oh, it might go purple, and then they would fix it so it went purple. Then they'd say, oh, it may go blue, and then they'd fix it so it went blue. So what they were doing is they were preconditioning the people to expect the manipulated result, and it was all done systematically. I didn't see it at the time. I feel like an idiot. For 20 years, I didn't, but now, once I've seen what I've seen, I know exactly how they did it, what they did, and I've seen the pattern. They do the same thing state after state after state after state. And you guys are one of the last. They haven't come and taken yet, but they're coming for you.
Okay, so give me, like a guy that does not have your background in tech, give me an explanation of how they do it. How does it start? How does it creep in? What mechanisms? Okay.
Sure. So basically, our elections used to be run by the people, shockingly, right? We used to go in, we'd make sure that we're only registered eligible voters. We'd mark a dot on a piece of paper. Each of us would do that. Then we'd grab the stack of papers, and we'd count all the dots. And whoever had the most dots win. It's really simple. Elections were very, very simple. For 150-plus years, that's what we did. And what happened is a group of people that said, if we want to take control of everything, we can't take from the citizens because they'll have a problem with that. But what if we create an electronic system to subvert their elections, and we'll market it, we'll sell it to them under the guise of safety and security and speed, and you sit on your butt and it'll do it for you type of thing. And so unsuspecting people thought that would be a good idea because they never thought to think, what could a bad guy do with this? How could someone take advantage of this system? What are the potential abuse vectors in this? They didn't think that. They only looked at the potential benefits. And so what they did is they started selling parts of our election control out from under us. They took it from our county clerks and they centralized the voter registrations. Then they took the actual counting of our votes away from the people and they moved to the county clerks. And then they put these computers in place. So they, the county clerks, all they were doing is plugging the computers in, feeding the ballots through, and then just assuming they work. And they even rigged the audits. Give people a false sense of security.
Okay, that's interesting because that's one of the things I've wondered about. They've gone back through an audited machine, say it looks good. You're saying that those audits are not real?
They're a total joke. In fact, the machine testing and certification is a total joke as well. I have actually, thanks to God, been put in a position to be able to see inside of one of these very common voting machines. And I found back doors built into the software that allow votes to be flipped without leaving any trace in the system. I found multiple back doors. And what I'm going to do tomorrow at this event, I'm going to show people the back doors directly so they don't have to take my word for it. They're going to see it right inside these voting systems.
Now, it's 10:30 tomorrow, y'all, at Hill Spring Baptist Church on Eliza Jordan. You looking at this, who is the they in this? Because I do wonder, is it that it's, you know, Democrat Party or somebody on the left that decided to put this in, or is it somebody who is agnostic and sells this to the parties, right? I mean, who's doing this? Who designed this?
It's D, all of the above. So that's who's using it, D, all of the above. Anyone that knows how to manipulate this system, which is a total Swiss cheese system, so there's so holes everywhere, and as long as you know how to exploit one or more holes, you can manipulate the results. But the people that actually architected this are those that like to control massive amounts of power, logistics, energy worldwide. These are the trillionaires and above that designed this ecosystem of electronic voting. And anyone that's corrupt wants to have a very vulnerable election system so they can exploit the areas of it that they have access to. And we are the citizens, we are the victims of this entire thing. Our liberties have been stolen from us, and we have all been enslaved. And I wish it wasn't true, but flat out, it is true. And the sooner the citizens wake up and realize it, the sooner we're going to be able to save our nation. If we do not wake up in time, we may lose this great nation. And I'm not worried about necessarily for me. I lived a pretty good life. I had some good years. But what I'm worried about is our children and our grandchildren. So you out there listening, you're not doing this. You don't need to just step in the fight for yourself. You're not doing it for you. You are doing it for our future, for your children, your grandchildren, and your grandchildren's children. We have no choice but to step up and reclaim our sovereignty, reclaim our liberty by reclaiming our election.
What's coming tomorrow is you're part of your hand count roadshow, right? This is the name for it, and right around the country doing this. So give me, you know, I know people are going to see in depth tomorrow, but hand count, you mean hand count, right? You mean no computers, you mean citizens sitting down and hand counting votes?
You got it. It's so simple. All we have to do is we move our voter registrations back into the hands of our local county officials, where we actually physically show up to register to vote so they know we exist. We sign our name on a voter registration card. They keep it by precinct. On election day, we go down. They got paper poll books all printed out with all the names that are registered to vote from the voter registration cards. The cards are there, too. We sign the paper poll book. They compare our first signature on the voter registration card with the signature that we just made in the poll book. If that checks out and our ID checks out, we're given a ballot. We fill the ballot out. We drop it in a box. At the end of the day, the box gets opened. You batch the ballots. You run 25. Each step to 25 is a batch. You run 25 right through a dumb scanner that just makes a PDF, takes a picture of all the ballots. That's all it does. And then a camera overhead that watches the entire hand count process. We, the people, count our own votes. It's amazing. Joseph Stalin was right. It doesn't matter who votes. It matters who counts the vote. And so we must be the ones that count the vote. And we do it in a way that's totally transparent and that has ballot images and video footage that we put up on the county website later. So for anyone that couldn't actually physically be there during the count of their precinct's votes, can just go pull the video footage and the ballot images, and they can recount the precincts all they want themselves. And then the icing on the cake and how we ensure this for generations is our kids in 6th through 12th grade, as part of their normal school after every election, they get a break that next day. The morning is a civics refresher on what the United States of America is, why it exists, what elections are, and how elections work. They go to lunch, and they come back from lunch. They break up into groups. They go on the county website. They download the ballot images and pull up the video from their precinct where their school is. And our children recount those ballots themselves in 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. We get 6 audits of every precinct's election by our children. And by the time they are graduating high school, they're 18 years old, and darn right they're going to register to vote, and darn right they're going to vote, because they will realize that this system is safe and secure and valid because they're the ones that have been auditing the results. So they will have real earned trust in our elections instead of mandated trust. And our children, if they have this beat into them for 6 years long, no, don't beat your children. But if they have been taught to them for 6 years straight and they're the ones responsible for auditing the elections, they are going to have this inbred in their soul, and they will demand that we always hand count our elections. And then every year we'll have a fresh set of graduated people from high school that will be a constant flow of citizens who run our elections for us. That's how we fix this generationally. And I'm here to help anyone figure out how to get that to happen. And we have no choice, actually. So that's why I'm here.
That is the Hand Count Roadshow. We're talking to Mark Cook, who will be at Hillspring Baptist Church tomorrow morning, 10:30. And we'll talk about the website in a second here if people want to get a little primer. But the in doing this, what's your success been like? I mean, because it doesn't seem like you're going at a state level. You're going to municipalities, or where do you go? Where do you think you're going to make this change?
I'm making the change everywhere I possibly can. So I originally started in just after 2020, I started going to the federal level. And I tried to educate everyone I could, but I realized that there is massive amounts of corruption. And the people up at the very top don't want this system fixed. In fact, they spend a lot of time and resources to keep us from fixing or even realizing it's been going on. So I know that the only solution is the local level. Local action leads us to national results. This is a bottom-up solution and a top-down, but we can't do the top ourselves. So we need, and that's what I'm doing, is I'm out at the county level educating the counties, the officials, commissioners, city council, sheriff, election official. And I'll tell you what, I am helping people understand where we're at. I'm showing them the insides of these systems they've never seen before. The entire system is built on a pyramid of lies. And I am here to bust all those lies, expose them all with a big flashlight. And when I show people this stuff, they understand the problem. And I've had great success in helping people understand what the issue is. I've talked to legislators that after I've talked to them, they said they weren't believers before, but they're believers now. And they said, I need to get you right in touch with our governor immediately. I've had county clerks come to actually argue, but after they've listened to what I've had to say and I've shown them the evidence that I've got, I've turned county clerks into believers of election fraud, where they have stood up and said, I need you in front of all my other clerks. Every clerk in this state needs to hear from you. And I'm working now with county clerks to do that. We have all been lied to. Our county officials have been lied to. Our clerks have been lied to. And so people, don't go in with pitchforks to your county clerks. They're victims too. They've all been lied to. What we need to do is solve this problem with truth and honesty and transparency. That's what we have to do, and that's what I'm here doing.
So, maybe it's probably different state to state, Mark, so I don't know, but let's say you get those county clerks and they say, you know what, we're going to do it this way. Can an individual county say, we're going to hand count, even though the other, we have 67 counties in Alabama. So let's say one of them does and says, we're going to hand count. 66 other counties say, we're going to do the same old thing. And I don't know if you know, I don't know the law for Alabama. Could one county decide to do it differently than the rest of the state?
I don't know enough about Alabama on that with regard to what's legal, quote unquote, or not. Because I just got here yesterday, and hopefully we'll learn that very quickly. But we have an existential crisis here. So we are in uncharted territory. we may have to look beyond the law a little bit here, and we all may need to collectively remove our head from our behind. The only way to fix this is if the citizens are counting their own votes. This nation belongs to the people. This state belongs to the people. The county belongs to the people. But the people are not involved in the counting process, and that is a massive problem. So I would love everyone to realize where we're actually at and just say, you know what, the only way to fix this, yep, we're putting it right back in the hands of the people. That's what we have to do. If we try to do it any other way or people put up roadblocks, I fear for what's going to end up happening. I have a pretty good view of the future, and it's not going to be a good thing. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to avoid that not good thing, and I'm trying to find the nice, easy way to do this. And as I say on my website, fair elections are the last nonviolent way to settling political discourse. I want the elections run by the people because I want to avoid that.
All right.
Problem.
The website, too, is what? Where can they go?
HandCountRoadshow.org is the website.
HandCountRoadshow.org, okay.
You got it. If you click on that big red button on the website there, it'll take you to my platform. It tells you exactly what we need to do and how to fix it. And if you scroll down, you'll see where I'm going to be after Alabama even. And you'll see all the events that I've got scheduled in Alabama and afterwards as well. And if you're in a county in Alabama, it is not necessarily too late to ask to come. I just get signed up on the website. Go to Take Action, request a visit, fill it out. I'll be watching. I'll check it every day. And if I can find a way to fit you in and I can make it on the route and I don't run out of diesel on the way, I will be there in person. I'm going to do everything I can for my fellow citizens. And God bless you and God bless this nation.
All right. And tomorrow, 10:30, he will be speaking. You'll get to hear him in person at Hillspring Baptist Church on Eliza Jordan Road. Mark Cook, Hand Count Roadshow, we appreciate your time. Thanks for being on with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
All right. There he goes. Mark Cook at that event tomorrow. 10:30. So they got it going on. They had, Dr. Frank on Saturday, and they've got come up tomorrow, Mark Cook. Y'all drive safely out there. Y'all by my house. Be courteous when you're in my neck of the woods. And we'll be right back. Boom Pop Minutes next.
Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, top 156, FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. Get a few texts in here if we have a minute or two. Let's see. Sean on the text line. Remember Hunter S. Thompson lived in Colorado. Remember him getting in a gunfight with his neighbor over the hill. Total freedom back then. Yeah, Colorado, I've had some time to go out there about every other year and hunt. And you do see Western Colorado is still what I thought it would be. Eastern Colorado, not so much on that. So it is different. It is different out there. Let's see. Doesn't have Meta. They might be coming for us, but it might just surprise them when they get here. Let's see. Yeah, that was people asking who that was. That was Mark Cook, and he will be at Hillspring Baptist Church tomorrow, 10:30. Paul, we're going to lose this nation probably in the next 20 years. There will be a central global government. I don't want that. But it's going to happen. This texter, unnamed texter, come on, y'all, give yourself a nickname or something. Said, bingo, this guy is great. I hope he has good security. Jason says, excellent guest, and we got to get Caroline, and he means Caroline Dobson, connected with him. Yeah, so that's, I guess she's aware. I don't know. I can't speak for her if she's aware or not. But it'll be interesting tomorrow, because there's a lot of people say, well, they're, This is why these people are interesting to me, to just study. And because a lot of people say, well, you stole the election. Okay. And then I'm not being a jerk. I'm just interested. I'm like, okay, how? Tell me how. Not just, oh, well, they do that. But I need the mechanics of it. And it looks like that's some of the discussion that Mark Cook is presenting. We'll see what comes of that. And we'll do the show again tomorrow. Heck, I'll be in here for Mobile Mornings with Dan tomorrow morning. Paul Feinbaum show on the way next. Y'all have a great one.